Tech is a bi-weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Welcome back to Wells Tech, everybody. This is episode 745, and we're recording it on March 5th. That's a Wednesday in the year 2025. My name is Martin Spriggs. This is a show about technology and ministry and where those two intersect. Joining me in this conversation on in almost all of those 745 episodes is Sally Draper. Hello, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. And it is a Wednesday. It's a special Wednesday in our church here. It's Ash Wednesday, to be specific. Mm-hmm. So yep. Don't usually record on Wednesdays.
Yep. Just had chapel here at the CMM. I don't know if anybody knows that, but every Wednesday morning we do have chapel. There are different chapel speakers, and President Schrader gets some of the special ones. So he was a speaker for Ash Wednesday today. So blessings on everybody's Ash Wednesday. I don't know if you say Happy Ash Wednesday or Blessed Ash Wednesday, but blessings on your worship more than likely this afternoon or this evening. Probably long gone since we won't publish this till after, but you've got plenty of other Lenten opportunities. So, Sally, we've had a busy week.
We have. There and back again. We made it to the lovely campus of Divine Savior Lutheran Church and Academy down in Doral/Miami, Florida. Mm-hmm. And it was a very wonderful experience to be there. The atmosphere and the campus that they have there is just amazing. And it was so good to see it in person after hearing so much about it. And then obviously the event we were there for turned out to be pretty awesome as well. What event was that, Martin?
We called it the Wells Tech AI Summit. And it was a kind of an intimate gathering. We invited about 30 people to come down for the weekend. So we started on Friday afternoon, met all day Saturday and half a day on Sunday, and then everybody went their separate ways. It was interesting to meet some new people, people that we had maybe not even heard of before, but they were nominated by different people across the Synod as potential good resources for a conversation about AI, and then met with some of our old friends as well. Saw Jason and Rachel there, and number of other people that we see on a more frequent basis. So it's an awesome week and an awesome weekend. I think it was, it met our expectations and a lot of good conversations.
Yeah, I'm glad that you can say it met our expectations, because I was really quite unclear what our expectations were going in. Wasn't your typical conference that you go to. It was right. More of a kind of a think tank event where we mm-hmm. just did a lot of brainstorming and a lot of listening to all these different voices from all different vocations across the Synod. And I, for one, am just really excited about the way the discussions went mm-hmm. and how AI actually helped us kind of pull it all together. Sometimes, I guess we had 30 people. That's still a pretty significant number of people to be doing brainstorming. So each time we broke out into different brainstorming groups, we had four of those going on. We did that five different times. So add up all those numbers, 30 voices, 20 different sessions. And it was really a blessing to be able to feed it all to AI, all the notes from those sessions, and have it determine what some of the common themes were across all the conversations.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Everybody had a Google Doc going, and we had four versions of the same conversation, the same questions, the same objectives, and they all went different directions, which is perfect. Mm-hmm. We gave quite a bit of latitude, and we had a number of different objectives, which we feathered in through all of those breakouts. So just to let everybody know what those what our objectives were. One of them was explore ways to educate and prepare. So introducing educators in general to AI technologies and application. We wanted to discuss ways to enhance teaching and learning. So not just what is it, but how to use it. What is its place in teaching and learning? And then one of the big topics that kind of wove its way, I think, through a lot of the conversations was ethical considerations and concerns. Where does this fit in the toolboxes of our coworkers, our pastors and our teachers and our church leaders? And of course, the question that has always been around for on the student side, where does this fit in their educational life and its use and misuse? So that was another one. Promoting AI literacy, how do we kind of get the word out and create scenarios, maybe even collaborative spaces where we can foster best practices, share best practices and innovation, and how do we keep the conversation going and keep this available and in the minds of those to whom it could benefit? So those were kind of our high-level objectives, and I think in general, our conversations kind of zeroed in on all of those.
Yeah, and you're right. I think we were talking about that ethics from the very beginning. I think we were talking about tools all throughout, but we had three keynotes that kind of drove some of the conversation from really a high level. Our first keynote speaker, Dr. Thomas Fry, spoke to visions of the future. He actually is a futurist. That's how he's made his mark on the world over all the years of his career. And he really stretched our thoughts about what the future is going to look like. And that was super interesting and engaging to kind of go down those paths and just dream of what that's going to be like. You know, thinking backwards from there, we sure didn't know the impact of the cell phone, the smartphone, when it came out, like in 2007-ish or whatever. We didn't realize how we'd be so attached to it in 2025 or whatever. So neat to think about.
A statement was made a number of times there that AI has a potential to be exponentially more disruptive and more influential is maybe not exactly the right word, but it's kind of what it is, than the smartphone ever was. And brought up some interesting questions around it. So the second keynote, which was on Saturday morning, was by the CTO of one of our trusted IT partners here in the Milwaukee area, Nate Lesnoski from Concurrency, talked a lot about the very technical nature of AI and some real practical advice on setting up agents and what its application is, especially in the office world or in the world where we can have significant gains for automation, removing the mundane and the repetitive tasks. That was a great keynote where he brought it to a very practical place. So thanks to Nate for joining us for that. And then we finished it up with a couple of teachers, Mike Blocker from St. Paul's in New Ulm, and Dr. James Karlofsky from Martin Luther College. And they did a co-presentation on, again, AI's place in education and some of the considerations that they're thinking about day in and day out as we talk about where this all fits. So those got us off to kind of good thinking starts, but kind of the real energy, as you mentioned, Sally, I think was in the breakout groups and some of the recommendations that came out of those. So I think some of the actionable items, kind of cutting to the chase of what's next, is there was a lot of talk about the need for an AI policy, something that we can provide as guidance, especially to schools, about how AI can be used. So that was one of the suggestions. that something like that be built. Another one was some kind of mentorship or support network or a speaker bureau or something that can give people other people who can help them. So the ability to tap somebody on the shoulder and say, hey, we're thinking about doing this, or what are your thoughts about that? So connecting people who have a desire to grow here and to make some decisions with some people who've maybe already been through that. So those are a couple of the big ones. Another one was, as is often the want of conferences like this, is to create an AI task force, which I think is good in this case, because there needs to be a dedicated group of people paying attention to this. It just can't be the group of 30 that met, you know, kind of loosely saying, yeah, we ought to continue thinking, talking about this. I think there needs to be some more formal gathering or smaller group that can push an agenda, so to speak, and what are the important topics and the things that need to be in our consciousness as we go forward? How do these things take on, you know, how do we put skin on these things? That makes sense.
Right. How do we use them to God's mm-hmm. glory and not fall into any pitfalls that may be out there around bias or those kind of concerns that are legitimate concerns, but concerns that we feel confident can be addressed and handled in a God-pleasing way with the tools that he's giving us. So what an exciting time, Martin. And it's kind of hard to imagine that future, but at least we know we're going to continue to look at it and continue to react and not kind of hide from what is around us. So,
I'd say in general, I'm super excited about what came out of that, and pleased that the format worked for us, bringing people together loosely around, you know, some fairly high level objectives and see what they come up with. Technology certainly helped us, and you know, we're going to release an executive summary here that people can read through and react to, and see what goes from there. But boy, the ability to synthesize and work through and summarize all the stuff that was collected across four times five breakouts. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we had 20 different groups that met. And what we also did was we mixed everybody up. So it wasn't the same breakout every time. So you got to hear different perspectives. And that was a nice thing too, I think, about the summit. We had a lot of diversity there. We had different age groups. We had different types of call workers, church leaders, different perspectives and interests, and different experiences with AI. Some had very little or almost none, and others had been in it since the beginning. So I thought that added a lot to the dynamic too.
Yeah, definitely an interesting group of people. And I guess I'll just geek out over a little bit more of the technology we used. We talked about people typing notes into Google Docs and feeding mm-hmm. those all in, but some people actually turned on audio recording, you know, through their phone or whatever, and used tools like Otter and Fireflies. I know Copilot does this as well, to make recordings and then have the AI basically translate the recording and then react to it or mm-hmm. use it as the notes or whatever. And so that was just another level of AI. And a lot of the emphasis and all the discussion was, let's let AI do these practical time-saving things. We're not talking about changing doctrine in any way because AI comes up with something crazy. We're talking about recording meeting notes because it's a huge benefit to actually see what action items came out of the meeting and things like that. And AI is getting pretty good at those kind of tasks.
Yeah. I'm going to try a new tool that I ran across. This is not my pick, by the way, but something called Voice Notes. It's a similar to Otter and Firefly, those kinds of things, but it has some AI, nice AI built in, but you basically just load it up in your browser and hit record. And it will record up to 90 minutes, I want to say. And I've got a strategic planning committee meeting coming up at our congregation. I'm going to turn that on. And That will allow me, because I'm usually the note taker, that will allow me not to take notes. I'm going to try it at least and see what it comes up with. And then I can be more fully present in the meeting, trusting that the AI is transcribes it all, but also records it so you can actually go back, which you really never do, right? I mean, we record them all, but nobody's really listening through them again. So hopefully AI captures that and provides some good some tools around that. So exciting times.
I don't remember exactly, but in some of the discussion or somewhere I heard that AI can actually capture the tone of the conversation and maybe gather all those things over 6 months of strategic planning or something like that, and help to meld all of that information together. It's just pretty.
Wasnowski talked about that. Yeah.
Sure. Mm-hmm. There you go. Yeah. So, I took away a lot more confidence with AI from the discussions that were held and just the ways that it can benefit us as we carry out gospel ministry. So exciting times.
Yeah. So we want to thank everybody who was there. I know many of them are listeners. Tremendous job. They gave up a weekend, you know, for this, even though it was in Miami in February. It's still a commitment. And the time that they spent, and they worked. I mean, it was not just a sit back and listen kind of conference. It was, hey, you're here to contribute, and they all came through. So, thanks to everybody for doing that.
I was tired at the end of the day, for
sure. Yeah, I was too. Yeah,
Martin, just one more point that came to mind was, somewhere along the line, someone said, everybody's putting money into AI, and everybody's exploring and trying all these things. But at some point, AI is going to cost instead of just being free to make use of. And so there will be dollars around this, and monetizing will come into play soon enough. So,
yeah, just like any other technology, there is advancement, but that comes at a cost. And you have to kind of weigh, you know, what it's worth.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Good. So, yeah, thanks again to everybody and to the committee, you, Sally, and Jason and Rachel for stepping up. And our event coordinator, Michelle Gardner, who planned dinner and all kinds of cool stuff. So we thank her, too, for taking that off our plate. That's something that's the last thing to spend time doing, and she did an awesome job.
And thanks to the good people at Divine Savior who let us invade their space.
Yeah, shout out to Pastor Steve Miller and Joaquin, who manned the AV controls through the whole time, you know, just as a volunteer. So it's awesome.
Yeah, and they even had someone from their food staff catering our little lunch and things like that. So it was just a wonderful experience all around.
Becky Miller, Steve's wife, was our liaison. So took a lot of people to bring this together. I think it was a success.
Yes.
All right. Should we move on? Let's move on to our ministry resource segment. And this, interestingly enough, came out of the AI conference.
It did.
I should say.
It was actually brought up by several people along the way, but one advocate in particular is teacher Andrew Hillman, who's an English teacher at Lakeside Lutheran High School. This is his first year as a called worker. He's previously taught in the public school sector, and now he is at Lakeside, and came very highly recommended because he's brought brisk teaching to Lakeside, and they are super excited about it over there. So I asked Andrew about his experience with brisk, and he said it's all been very positive. He started using it last year at his previous school, which was Pewaukee High School, and they've been working with people at brisk, and they were part of a pilot classroom using Brisk Boost, which is the student version of Brisk teaching. And after seeing all of that play out with his students and everything, he was very excited to bring that to Lakeside. So he's seen remarkable improvements in both teaching efficiency and student outcomes. The platform will quickly provide feedback on student writing tailored to any provided rubric. He's been using Brisk Boost feature more often because it provides a critical thinking experience for his students. And so that premium version of Brisk has transformed his approach. And he listed a couple of different ways: AI-powered lesson planning aligned with state standards, differentiated learning pathways, real-time collaboration tools, and advanced student progress tracking. So if you haven't checked it out, it's at briskteaching.com, and you can definitely use it for free. Allows you to, this claim says, reclaim 10 plus hours weekly with Brisk Teaching. Mm. I remember going into one of our sessions and like, what are we trying to accomplish with AI? What would be our goals or whatever? And someone said, well, a dear friend stays at school every night till 8 p.m., you know, third mm-hmm. grade teacher. And she's just so dedicated, but she does so much manual work that keeps her tied up. And you know, it'd be nice to at least give her maybe one evening at home mm-hmm. away from school or whatever. So they've got all kinds of tools in the tool chest here. Instructional materials where you can create presentations, generate lesson plans, make quizzes, make rubrics, all kinds of things around state guidelines and generating UDL lessons, et cetera. And then IEPs are even included here for student intervention, managing administrative tasks, observation notes, newsletter generator, and even giving feedback for teachers, for students, targeted feedback, impacting and inspecting students' writing, changing reading levels. The list just goes on and on. And then with the upgrade to Brisk Boost for students, they can use the Chrome extension and use it on the web to get detailed targeted feedback on their own work. So I think several people at the conference were users already and eager to share the news that this is a great tool. And so we just wanted to make mention of it as a ministry resource. If you're using it and have something that you can show us as a demo of how it's helping you or whatever, we'd love to hear more about your experience with Brisk Teaching.
Yeah. And Andrew Hillman, thank you for both your attendance at the summit, but also your contribution here to give us a little bit of your experiences with Brisk. So sounds like a tool that could be checked out. Good. Let's move on to our tips or picks of the week. Sally, what did you bring this week?
Well, I am a subscriber to Concordia Technology Solutions, where we work with them closely in the past on Shepherd Staff and now on Church 360. And recently they released a bundle that you can get for free of Lent and Easter resources. So they've got a checklist for your website around Lent and Easter. They've got some different imagery, homepage imagery, what they call a hero banner, or the large image that may be prominent at the top of a website, and then even social media templates. And I did download these, and they have them in different perspectives. So, you know, something that's more like a portrait sheet of paper versus a wide thing versus a square perspective, and several different templates for both Lent and Easter. They've got communication blueprints. This is really cool, where they actually give you like some email verbiage, and they have kind of fill in the blank places where you can customize it for your own usage, some social media post, that kind of thing. And then church management software prep. So I thought it was a great bundle of resources, even if you end up just using one thing from it. The price is right, and that's free. So if you're interested, then head on over to the link we'll have in the show notes and download the Lent and Easter resources from Concordia Technology.
Very good. Mm-hmm. All right. My pick of the week. It's no secret that browsers are a big part of our lives. Many of the applications that we use today are browser-based, and there is no substitute for a good browser, and one of the bigger ones, obviously, is Chrome. I would suspect that a lot of our listeners use Chrome. We've talked about others before, Edge and Arc and Safari and so forth, Firefox. But Chrome is continually improving the experience. And Chrome was just updated on my computer the other day and thought it'd be a good time to remind people that there are places you can find out all the new features. This is definitely an area of innovation for browser makers that allow you to do different things that you couldn't do before. So I wanted to share a link of all the things that have been recently added to Chrome. There's a What's New archive. And I was surprised at the number of things that have been added recently, not just things that are AI related, but one of the things that caught my attention this time was the ability to put little shortcuts in the nav bar of favorite features. So many of us have a bookmark bar at the top, but we don't like necessarily losing that real estate by having that bookmark bar constantly showing. So there is a way now to put a little bookmark open and close icon in the top nav where your profile is and those kinds of things, where you can just open it and close it. There are shortcuts that they've created for searching bookmarks. There's Google Lens so that you can point it at something on the screen and it'll do a smart search for it. There are tab functions, translations, tab groups, creating unique images. All the Gemini stuff is listed here. So lots of cool stuff. So I just wanted to make sure everybody was aware of that. And maybe as a little bonus tip, if you haven't ever used profiles, I think I've talked about this in the past, but this is something that allows you to create a different browser experience or ecosystem for different profiles or modes of your life. So you can have a browser, a Chrome version or a profile that you use for home or church or work. For instance, I use basically three. I have one that's kind of home, and all the shortcuts and the extensions are related to home use. So my password manager is different for work and for home. So I put that extension there. It allows you to create a different theme for each one. So it's easy to see on your screen. So if you've got two up at the same time. So my work Chrome is green. My home is blue. And then I teach a class for MLC. That one's red. So I've got three different profiles. And so when you open up, let's say, Gmail in any one of the three profiles, it opens up the right Gmail and the right Google Drive and the right Google Docs. So you're not having to wade through your home and your work and your school drive content or mistakenly add a document to the wrong one. So this kind of keeps them somewhat quarantined. And syncs across different ones and in the mobile experience too. So if you use Chrome as your phone's browser, it will remember those and you can switch back and forth. So remembers your search history by profile, which is kind of nice too. So that if you want to go back in some home searches, you're not bothered or crowded by, you know, stuff that came up and that you used in a work environment or a school environment. So lots of cool things with Chrome, all free. So there's no cost to any of this, but just some features that might increase your productivity if you just pay attention to what's out there. And Edge does some of these things too. I'd say those two are maybe leaders in the space, but let's take a look at what's in your Chrome browser. That's my tip.
That's awesome. Yep. Yeah, I haven't made use of that and I probably should. So I have some overlap between home and work, but I don't use Chrome as my main browser at work. I use Edge. So
Edge, right?
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, and that's one way to do it too. But then what I found doing, and I've tried that too, what I found if you use one, two different browsers for home and work on the same computer sometimes, you have to set a default browser.
Yes.
So when you click a link, sometimes it's opening the wrong one. That was very frustrating. So this alleviates that problem. But anyway, so just a little tip there for you, Chrome.
All right. Thanks for sharing that knowledge.
And one of the videos that we'll share in the show notes is a teacher who talks about tech topics, and he's talking about switching and using profiles for his school account versus his home account. So it's very easy to do. Community news and feedback, Sally.
Well, the first thing I wanted to share, and we'll have a link in the show notes to an article about this, is that Facebook has made a change and they are no longer allowing unlimited storage of live video. So if you use Facebook to go live and you've depended on that archive being there with your Facebook account, that is going away. And actually, they announced it like 2 weeks ago and said the date for all this to happen was coming up almost immediately. So it kind of shocked a few people, I think. But I don't know how many of our congregations maybe go use Facebook Live for their live streaming of services. Or there might be other applications where you've done classes or whatever that you'd wanted to keep and be able to reference or whatever. They're only going to live for 30 days. That's the storage limit now. And moving forward, you just need to be aware of that. Now, what I've seen in different groups and things that I'm a part of is that people, for one, immediately downloaded a whole lot of their videos. In this article I'm linking to, there's instructions for how to do that. It's a Facebook, you know, kind of walks you through with screenshots and things like that. So if you need to save some of your videos, now would be the time to do that because they will be deleted. The article also references that you can request a 6-month stay of execution kind of thing. So you can get some time to deal with your video archive if you do have those out there. So it walks you through how to request that 6-month extension as well in this article. I have seen people say, you know, moving forward, I'm not going to do Facebook Live anymore. I'll use YouTube Live and just embed it on my Facebook page. So there's a lot of different ways that you can go live. You don't have to be totally tied to Facebook, but if you've built an audience there, if your people are expecting, you know, content there, or people follow your church for your sermon every week there, then either you're going to need to retrain or you're going to need to kind of cross post in order to reach that Facebook audience if you aren't going to use their live tool. Or you continue to use their live tool and just make it a practice to download it immediately if you want to archive it somewhere. So just some decisions to make or consider around Facebook Live video and how you reach your people using that and whether you want that archive or not. So thought it was worth a consideration. The other piece of news that we have came from the Wells Intersections group, and I thought this was an interesting post. Pastor Peter Hagen had posted a list of suggested social media guidelines. So how you use social media as a congregation or school maybe needs a little more thought than just randomly posting, you know, that you're having kindergarten roundup or whatever it is. This person suggested that you know what you're trying to accomplish and focus, always being considerate of your goals and not just randomly posting links or things like that. Another point was to stay out of other people's squabbles and drama. Don't argue. And it's kind of hard sometimes when things get heated, but it doesn't seem to accomplish anything constructive when you do get in the middle of some kind of squabble. So just kind of avoid that. And then when you don't know, either keep your mouth shut or admit you don't know. Don't try to fake your way through because people will see through that, obviously. So no point in doing that. And then finally, you can mix in some humor and general interest stuff, even some family stuff. Every post doesn't have to change the world, so to speak, but just kind of being real. So those were some interesting guidelines. If you have others,
just like any conversation, right?
Yes,
I mean, that's the social nature of it. So thanks, Peter. Wells Intersections is still a great place. There's an active group there that are constantly having conversations, and I think I'm going to dip my toes in there again and talk about the AI summit and get some reactions there too. It's probably a good group to float some of that stuff by.
Sounds like a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Sally, how can somebody contribute to the show if they were so inclined?
Well, that's a great question, Martin. Probably the best place to start is to head over to our show website, which is wellstech.wells.net. There you're going to find all 745 episodes once we add this one, as well as links to all our different social platforms up along the top bar. There's a sidebar where people can send a voicemail. You can always email us at wellstech@wells.net or leave a comment on the show. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to incorporate your ideas or invite you to be interviewed on the show and share your ideas. Please do contribute.
Very good. That's going to wrap it up for today, episode 745. We're going to come back and do this all over again and have our good friends Jason Schmidt and Rachel Reno join us and talk about about AI and secondary tech integration.
We're talking about SAMR model and secondary tech integration. So,
well, I'm sure AI will come up.
I bet it will.
It's on our minds, but secondary tech integration. So that'll be an interesting conversation. They always bring the goods. So I'm looking forward to that conversation. All right. That's going to about do it. Thanks everybody for joining us. Blessings on your Lenten journey, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.